check out Rush Collectibles' awesome horror figures, including the first and only Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2 figures. For more information, go to rushfigures.com.
Remember, in the course of discussing movies, the host will spoil plots. You've been warned. Listen to their screams.
Greetings, ghouls and creeps, and welcome to Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. I am one of your friends, Dave. We're joined, as always, by our other friend, Ike. Ike, how are you?
Hey, I'm not doing too shabby. I'd be a lot better if I had me a Mr. Pibb, as they call him.
The kids call it Mr. P?
That's what I call it. I don't know if I count as a kid, but...
Apparently you're voting yourself as the representation of the younger generation.
Amen to that. Mr. P. It's like Mr. White.
What? I did not follow that train of thought. What are you talking about?
Like Breaking Bad.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Okay, Mr. White, we need to cook.
I see what you're saying now.
Science,
okay.
Bitch.
Oh, all right, well, coming out of the gate hot today.
Damn straight.
Woo! On today's episode, eventually, we were going to be reviewing the movie Life of Bill, which will soon be out on Screenbox. Before then, we'd like to say thank you to our wives, listeners, and followers for all of your support, sharing, networking, blah, 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 listening, everything you do. Thank you. You make it all possible for us to do this. So, Ike, before we dive into everything, did you watch anything this week?
I say yeah, but kind of, because I restarted Supernatural, so...
There you go. Attaway.
Obviously, Attaway. Supernatural is going to pretty much commandeer anything I'm watching for, like, the next year, so...
As it should.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it. That's all I've watched.
That makes me happy. We're rewatching, you know, we just continually... I think we're on our 11th rewatch, I think.
Dang.
Yeah, we're just finishing season 5 on this rewatch. So, very good, very good. So the only thing I watched outside of Supernatural and the continuation of the Walker watch through I've doing, which Walker's a pretty good show. I did watch on Shudder the movie The Jester, which came out in 2023. Literally just scrolling through one day to try to find something to watch, saw it, and I thought, what the hell? And it was okay. Nothing spectacular. Nothing magnificent. I do like the Jester character in it. He was pretty cool. Looked pretty awesome. But not bad. But it was an okay watch. So otherwise, that's all I watched.
There you go. Easy peasy right. Week.
Absolutely. Just the way we like it. So let's venture on into our weekly segment.
7 Screams of Horror.
And this week we're doing the 7 Screams of Horror. This is much like the 7 or 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, but we're giving ourselves an extra scream. And this is where we have 2 actors that are given to us by Kayla or Monica, one or the other. And we are to link them together much as you do in 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. And this week Kayla has given us Lin Shaye and Mia Goth. So, Ike, did you connect these two?
I sure did.
I did too, and it was a pretty easy link when I got digging into it.
Yeah, it was. So at first I was confused, but
me too.
I thought about it for a second, and I think I found a pretty good one. Remind me, when we did this last time, we don't count the first or last person.
No.
We only count the people in the middle. Yes. For points, right?
We do not count Lin Shaye or Mia Goth. We only count the actors in between.
Okay. Gotcha.
So how many actors, I don't remember how it was all scored, so you'll have to score, but how many actors did it take you to connect the two?
Yep. Well, real quick, I'll explain the scoring for those at home.
There you go.
So basically, when you count the connections between the two people, like you said, we're not going to count either of the starting or ending points. So Lin Shaye and Mia Goth are no points. They just exist. So each person you connect, as long as it's connected through a horror film, you get 1 point. If it's a non-horror film, you get 2 points. Now, it's like golf or mini golf. You want as little points as possible. So ideally, the lowest you could possibly get would be like 1 point, right? Kayla tries her best to get people who are not in the same movie. So there should be no 0 point nonsense. So the lowest you could possibly get would be 1 point for one person connecting the two.
All right. So given that system, Mike, what do you think you have this week?
I have a 3-pointer.
Oh, dude. I got 1 point. I got them connected by one.
I was having a hard time. I found a 3-pointer, so I'll be interested to see what your 1-pointer is.
Well, this is a little obscure, but it is there. Check on it. All right, here we go. Starting with Lin Shaye. Lin Shaye is in Insidious Chapter 2.
Mm-hmm.
Little known, also in Insidious Chapter 2, is the 11-year-old Jenna Ortega. She plays Andy in the one scene where the guys come to the door and she says, "Who's that behind you?" That's Jenna Ortega.
No shit.
Absolutely. And then Jenna Ortega is in X with Mia Goth.
Damn. Okay. Mm-hmm. You got me there, because I definitely didn't have that connection. And I definitely did not know she was in that movie.
She is, yes.
Wow. I did confirm she plays Annie in Annie in Insidious Chapter 2. Damn. Yep. Okay.
She was like 10 or 11 just in that one scene. Right at the very end of the movie, even. I think that's the final scene.
It's supposedly supposed to kind of set up like another movie, but yeah. I don't know if they ever ended up doing anything with it.
Yeah, who knows? But so there you go. 1 point for me.
Damn. All right. Well, I'll give my connection just because, you know, just for shits and giggles.
Yeah.
But so I connected it to Lin Shaye was in Nightmare on Elm Street with Robert Englund. Robert Englund was in Stranger Things with Winona Ryder. And Winona Ryder and Jenna Ortega are going to be in Beetlejuice 2. And then Jenna Ortega and Mia Goth are in X. So three people. So Robert Englund, Winona Ryder, Jenna Ortega.
There you go. That's a pretty good link. Pretty good.
Yeah, that was a good one. It took me a little bit. But yeah, I guess I did not realize that Jenna Ortega was in Insidious. Because that is a 1-pointer. That's a direct link.
Yeah, absolutely. I had to verify and double check that. I'm like, oh, really? Is it just one? But an appearance that's high on Jenna Ortega's resume list, because she was young and it's only one scene, but it counts nonetheless. So there you have it.
True story.
Woohoo! But
got me beat there. Can't beat one.
I can't win a trivia, but I can. I pulled this one out. So I got something going for me. So, all right, then, with that said, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have all of our news, birthdays, movie anniversaries, etc., so stick around. Make sure you subscribe to listen to their screams on your favorite podcast platform. Also, make sure you look us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, TikTok, and Slasher. All you have to do is look up Listen to Screams, that is Listen, the number 2 in Screams, and you can find us there. Also, make sure you go and buy yourself a Listen to Their Screams t-shirt. You can find all of our shirts at tinyurl.com/screamsshirts.
Spread the news. And welcome back with news. All right, folks, we are going to start off here with, at a recent Q&A event, Heather Langenkamp made it clear she has the desire to play Nancy Thompson in another Nightmare on Elm Street movie. She said, "She's a great character. How could you say no?" Obviously, for those of us who are lovers of the Nightmare on Elm Street series and franchise, we are always looking forward to another adaptation, and obviously I think we would all love to see Heather Langenkamp in another movie. If it were my movie to make, I would definitely make sort of like a one more Nightmare movie with Robert Englund, Heather Langenkamp, kill off Heather Langenkamp, send her off with a bang. and, you know, do something else with the franchise from there. But that's just my two cents.
Yeah, I believe, I'm not 100% sure, but I also believe when discussing it, she said something, you know, of, you know, she sees all these franchises, you know, pulling in legacy characters and, you know, putting them in and support, kind of supporting roles and doing, you know, ending their character arcs and passing it on. And that's kind of what she sees, you know, is she would love to do something like that and to keep the ball rolling and kind of pass the torch along. I'd be down. I mean, she's been in, well, what, three Nightmare movies? Is that right? Two, three, and then New Nightmare?
Yeah, one.
She's the first one. Not two. One, three, and
New Yeah. Nightmare. I think you're right. Yeah. Wes Craven's New Nightmare was the one from the 90s, and then, yeah one
like
and three.
The, yeah, she was like the counselor one in Dream Warrior, counselor in Dream Warriors.
That is right. So give her a fourth.
Bring it on, but just whatever. Just give us some more Nightmare in some way. Come on. You know, obviously, yeah, it'd be great with Heather Langenkamp, but let's just do something.
True. It's been kind of sitting there for a while. But
yeah,
I'm sure somebody's got plans somewhere. I'm sure they got some strings pulling behind the scenes. I guess we'll see, though.
Who knows?
So speaking of legacy characters and old series, confusion is haunting the Crystal Lake Friday the 13th series. What we mean by that, of course, is that there were rumors that A24 had pulled the plug. Now, that is not the case, but they have, however, pulled the plug on Brian Fuller. Brian Fuller has said A24 has decided to go a different direction, and he is no longer associated with the project. Now, this, of course, is somewhat terrifying, because this sort of puts Crystal Lake in a limbo, which means that any work that has been done up to this point could very well be null and void, meaning that we may have to wait even longer for more content from the Friday 13th franchise. Obviously, for people who've kind of like, you know, kept their ear to the ground a little bit, they know that Friday the 13th has long suffered, you know, copyright and, you know, different sort of struggles between, you know, estates and whoever owns the rights to what. So this is just, I guess, more to add to that pile of, well, what's going to happen next?
Yeah, I don't, man, this is driving me mad. Because apparently I was under the impression that this thing had to be a little further along than it apparently is.
Right.
I thought they'd already started some filming and stuff. Apparently not, I guess. And, you know, man, I was excited with Brian Fuller being a part. I don't know when they mean a different direction. What do they mean? What's that mean, a different direction? That scares me. That phrase, different direction, frightens me when they say that, because does that mean they're trying something weird? Something that's a little out of the, so, I mean, it's risky, right? It might work, might not work. I don't know, but I know Fuller has been a part of this since the get-go and has invested some time in writing and, rumored to have worked with Kevin Williamson from the Scream franchise on some writing. And now I guess that's all just been thrown to the side and they're starting fresh. I don't know. What does this mean for Adrian King? Will she still be a part of it now? Is she still playing into the new? Because, you know, they said that she was a part. She said, I'm pretty sure she said it. So now that they're trying this new direction, is she still going to be part of it? I don't know. What are we getting? What's going on? I thought we were going to get something this year. And now I don't know. It's like Scream starts to get some direction and focus and things start happening and this and that. And so it's like, oh, let's pass the chaos to a different franchise. Why does one franchise always have to be so chaotic? Why can't everything just be harmonious or whatever you want to say? What's going on, man? Come on.
Yeah, it's frustrating too, because I feel like it's just long been an issue. I mean, Friday the 13th has, like, it just feels like ever since like the last few movies were made and like the remake, like we haven't really had any Friday the 13th content since 2008, which was 16 years ago. So you have 16-year lull where there's basically no content, unless you count fan content, of course, which to an extent I would count that. But yeah,
and there's been some good fan movies, right, for Friday the 13th. I mean, it is. I don't even know what to think. I just feel like, hey, just don't get your hopes up on anything until you start seeing trailers.
True.
I mean, because it's like, and even then, I don't even know. I don't know. I'm still hopeful that, hey, it's going to happen, but whatever.
Yep. Like you said, we shall see. All right. Moving on to some more positive news. The new 28 Years Later sequel trilogy is moving forward. The first movie has been announced to hit theaters on June 20th, 2025. So this would be really exciting because we have two 28 movies so far, 28 days and 28 weeks later. And the 28 Years Later is an interesting spin on that, and it's going to be a trilogy. I have not heard if there's going to be any of the characters from the original films coming forward as well. I don't really remember if any of the characters were left alive, like Cillian Murphy's character. But I'd be very curious to see if any of them are going to come back or where they go with those stories. I've always loved this series, so I'll be down for more content for sure.
Yeah. It's kind of hazy because it's been a long time since I've watched any of this. And I'm not remembering a lot of details on these. It's something that's, you know, this sparks, you know, the thing of, oh, it's probably due for a rewatch for me. But I'm excited that it could do something because it's a concept and everything that's just wide open. It is, you know, you could keep doing things with it, right? It's not so narrow focused that it you couldn't get creative with it and do something. So it's exciting. Yeah. Bring it on. And as long as we avoid the chaos of some of the other franchises, bring it on.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. And then on a sad note, Roger Corman, noted producer of such B-movies such as Monster from the Ocean Floor, Attack of the Crab Monsters, Blood Fist, and many more, has passed away as of May 9th at his home in Santa Monica, California. So it's weird because I don't know Roger Corman from any of those, but I do know that Roger Corman was in the Silence of the Lambs movie. Mm-hmm. I think he played one of the FBI directors or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah. And, you know, probably his biggest impact is not on any acting. It's probably not on any of these movies he produced per se directly. It is the influence some of these had on other filmmakers. There's been lots of big time filmmakers that has cited some of his B movies as, you know, inspirations when they were kids and stuff and inspired. So he inspired a lot of filmmakers. That's probably his biggest impact in my eyes. I'm not undermining his work. I'm just saying though, I don't remember names offhand, but I saw some articles citing some of the people he's inspired and they were like, we're talking top notch directors and producers here. I mean, we're talking big time and, you know, lots of different sites and things are doing, long tributes to him with lots of articles and different things. So, yeah, it's sad. I mean, I would consider him a pioneer in kind of these things that we love. So, whether you're directly into his work or not, he has just by virtue of the people he influenced, I mean, he has impacted us all as horror fans.
Yeah. And, I looked it up because IMDb has everything. So, Corman, as a director and or producer, is credited with starting and or mentoring the careers of now many famous directors such as Jonathan Demme, Francis Ford Coppola, Ron Howard, John Sayles, James Cameron, Joe Dante, Martin Scorsese, and writers such as Robert Towne and John Sayles. And he also gave early roles to unknown actors at the time such as Jack Nicholson, Charles Bronson, Robert De Niro, Sly Stallone, Sandra Bullock. So, I mean,
that whole list, you don't get much more premier A-list than that, those names. I mean, that's right. Remarkable. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, apparently even with some of those names, it even outside of horror, if you're a film fan at all, he's probably some trickle down effect impacted you. You know, I love Sly Stallone. I love all, you know, love the Rocky movies. I love the Rambo movies, all those things. So there you go. It's the impact, right? Monica loves Sandra Bullock. So there you go. There's an impact on her that she's not even aware of. She probably didn't know who Roger Corman is, but because of that, it's impacted her as a film, you know, a film fan. So, that's a pretty illustrious list of people that he's inspired or helped get their start.
Yeah, absolutely. So he will obviously be deeply missed and, that could be another fun game. Try and connect Roger Corman to your favorite actor or actress.
Yeah, apparently there was a lot of direct links there, so it wouldn't be too challenging.
That'd be pretty easy, I guess. Oh, Lord. But, all right. So, moving on to some upcoming birthdays. May 16th, 1944, Danny Trejo from such films like From Dusk Till Dawn, Devil's Rejects, and Spy Kids.
there you go. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because in Spy Kids, he literally plays, I think his name is Uncle Machete. So
that's funny.
I mean, literally, he plays the character he plays for Machete and fucking Spy Kids, which I've always loved. I love Spy Kids.
Yeah, so, but he's so fun because he also does a lot of voice acting, right? He's got a very distinctive voice. So, I mean, he's just such a fun guy, right? He just does so much stuff that just whatever he finds entertaining and fun, he goes for it. And, you look at him and he's like such a badass looking dude. And, he's got a pretty badass past, but, what a guy, man. I love From Dusk Till Dawn.
Well, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure, like, he did, like, hard time. I mean, he was, like, he served time, like, I want to say in, like, San Quentin or something like that, like, probably. Like, in an actual state pen, and, like, yeah, it's crazy, because, like you said, I mean, he just does whatever he wants. I mean, he makes movies that he loves, and, gets to make a lot of money doing it.
That's right. Living the life.
I actually just looked at his IMDb. He has 35 upcoming projects. 35. Jesus Christ. Anyway.
Like I said, I think he does a lot of, I think he does a lot of voice stuff now.
He must. He really must. Cause like there's two movies coming out this year. There's probably like 20 movies in production and then another 20 like in development. So yeah, he must be doing voice acting or just, I don't know, doing whatever hell he wants.
I mean, he has a very distinctive voice, so how could you not use him for voice acting? I mean, whatever. He apparently stays busy.
He certainly does. Man, got an IMDb list longer than a receipt from CVS. Let me tell you. that was a weird comparison, but it's true though. You ever seen those receipts from CVS?
Yeah, all kinds of coupons and CVS bucks. I mean, they're just like. Yeah, you're like standing there longer waiting for the receipt to print than you do for the transaction.
You really do. Anyhow, people who are watching this probably like, what the fuck, CPS? anyhow, moving on. May 20th, 1978. Mike Flanagan, known for his work on many a series on Netflix, but also Dr. Sleep and Hush. And I believe we talked about him last week, but he's also taking over the position for the Exorcist series that's coming out, right?
Yeah, that's what we talked about. There's a talk that he's going set to direct the next Exorcist film, so that will be pretty cool, I think.
Yep, absolutely. Love me some Mike Flanagan. Can't get me enough of the Flan. All right. Upcoming movie anniversaries. May 19th, 1989, Fright Night, Part 2. I have heard of Fright Night, but I have never watched either Part 1 or 2 of Fright Night.
Yeah, Fright Night's a fun movie. Part 2's a little weaker. I'm not as big a fan. But, you know, we were a little light on the film movie anniversary for whatever this time. So, yeah, it made the cut by that virtue. But, yeah, I'm not saying I'm a super fan of Part 2.
Not a super fan of Part Dose. Suppose that's just the case with a lot of part twos and part threes and everything else. Just part of the territory, I suppose. But, all right. Moving on. May 22nd, 2015, the remake of Poltergeist. I have seen this movie. I actually think I quite liked it. I like the original Poltergeist as well. But if I remember correctly, this one kind of has like the little clown doll that was like in all the trailers was kind of like the big thing for this movie.
I think so. Yeah. Again, I don't, it's been a while since I've seen this. I love the original Poltergeist. I've seen it many more times than this one. So I really can't speak to the remake a whole lot, but
it happens. I mean, a lot of the times when I watch these movies, like I watched it in 2015 when it came out. So I haven't watched it since then, probably, so.
Yeah.
Couldn't tell you much about it other than I have seen it, so. Anywho. All right. Let's see. I think that's almost it, except for we have two upcoming releases that you guys are going to want to know about.
Two?
Two! All right. Excuse me. The first one is.
Went a little hard with that, too, huh?
I think I did. Good Lord, I'm dying. Okay.
All right. The First Omen hits video on demand on May 28th, Hulu on May 30th, and Blu-ray and DVD on July 30th. So we're getting that in pretty quick succession. So video on demand, just again, May 28th, Hulu on May 30th, and Blu-ray and DVD on July 30th. So keep an eye out for that. And we have reviewed this before, so make sure you check that out as well.
Yep.
And then the big ticket item from the upcoming releases, The Strangers Chapter 1, hits theaters on May 17th. So that is a mere few days away from when we record, and this is a mere one day away from the date in which you guys are listening to this. Mm-hmm. We are going to be reviewing this next episode. Dave and I are beyond excited for this film, and I dare say that this will be a competitor for top five of 2024.
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. The original scared the bejesus out of me, and so we'll see what happens with this one. I'm super excited.
I completely forgot because we were talking about it earlier, and I had started rewatching Supernatural like we talked about, but I did rewatch The Strangers and The Strangers Prey at Night over the weekend, but I completely forgot about it. So
there you go. Do they hold up?
They do. The Strangers is still really good. I was talking to Kayla. Kayla really likes the Strangers Prey at Night movie. And she likes Strangers, but I think she likes Prey at Night a little bit better. They're both good though. They're both solid. I'm very curious though to see where the new movies go.
Yeah. Me too.
But we shall see. We shall see. You guys will hear from us next week to see if this new film holds up or if it is dead in the water. Anywho.
Like Open Water.
Like Open Water. Like any of those movies.
Sorry. Oh, wait, not Open Water. What was it called? Night Swim. Why did I say Open Water? Yeah, never mind.
I don't know.
Like Night Swim.
I was about to say, I thought Open Water was just kind of like a campy, like, shark flick or some shit.
Yeah. I did not mean that one. I meant
Night Swim.
I meant Night Swim. See, I tried to take a cheap shot at Night Swim, and it backfired on me. So, my apologies.
See, I think that just means that, like, Night Swim has so scarred you that you just kind of block it out of your memory. And you're like, oh, what was that movie called again?
Man, I was so hyped too, because I was like, it was like right at the beginning of the year, and I was like all excited because we're starting a new year and all these new films. And I remember last year getting started with, I think it was it Megan? I think it was like the first big thing, and it was pretty good. And so I was all like, yeah, let's go. Let's get 2024 kicked off. And I went and watched it. I was like, fuck, what are we going to do here now? Is this seriously our year?
Right.
And, you know what? So far, I'm going to say this. I'm going to be a little controversial, or maybe it's not controversial. There have been some decent movies. There have been okay. But so far, yeah, I think that's kind of been the trend so far this year. We've talked about these kind of lukewarm horror movies. It's just, they're not really, you know, doing their thing. But, you know, we do have Terrifier 3 coming in the fourth quarter. So
that's what I was going to say. I think Terrifier 3 is going to be a strong, strong competitor. But like you said, 2024 has been a little weak sauce so far. There's been a handful of good movies like Immaculate and First Omen and stuff like that. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we got Strangers next week. So here's hopeful. But before that, we have another movie to talk about before that. So
we sure do. So when we come back, we will have our official review of our film this week, which is Life of Bell. Stick around.
This is Wrestling Nostalgia, the podcast that dives into wrestling history. Hey, wrestling fans, I'm Dave Dynasty. And if you enjoy podcasts that are knowledgeable and history-driven, then Wrestling Nostalgia is for you. With great guests and fun interviews, there are over 200 episodes in our archives. We chat with several first-time guests and often cover topics not discussed on other podcasts. Look up Wrestling Nostalgia on your favorite podcast platform and visit all of our links at linktree.com/wrasslepod. That is linktr.ee/RASSLEPOD. And remember, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing. All right, and welcome back to Listen to Their Screams. We have review time. We're going to talk about Life of Bell, which is coming out on May 17th on Screambox. Like we said, that's one day after the release of this. So we have a screener link and we got to preview it early. The movie was written and directed by Sean Robinson, starring Cyrene Robinson, Zachary Robinson, and others. I'm wondering here, hey, I'm wondering, are those Robinson kids? Are those Sean's kids? I'm guessing probably. They took the kids and terrorized them a little bit, yelled at them, did a few things in the movie. I'm thinking, Sean, those are your kids. I'm feeling like you said, those are my kids. Let's do it. Interesting. It is a found footage film about a missing child, Belle, played by the aforementioned Cyrene. I think it's how you say her name, Cyrene Robinson. And this is essentially where it's the home footage from their home. And it's from security cameras and a camera that Belle receives for her birthday, because she appears that she wants to do like a YouTube type channel or something like that. And, you know, and be kind of a, you know, an online celebrity. She's as her thing or whatever. So she gets a camera for her birthday. It starts out with some, some of the authority, a policeman. It gets a little bagger, right? So I think it starts with a news clip. Then it talks about the policeman where they kind of set the stage, right? That this child's missing. And they're speaking as to why are they releasing the footage. It's because the authorities and the family thought it was the best to try to get Belle back. And since this movie is coming out prior to release, we're not going to give out plot details. We're just going to give our reactions and our feelings of the movie. And I've been very critical of found footage films in the past, right? Coming into some of these, and there's been several over the past couple, whatever, year and a half or whatever that we've done the show. I was like, there's just a couple found footage that I really like, and the others are like, eek. And I've always said, because it's kind of, they kind of tend to blur a lot for me sometimes. And, but there have been some here lately, that have really kind of turned me around, you know, primarily Deadstream, right? Deadstream kind of kicked it up for me. It kind of opened my eyes a little bit. And there's been some others, the VHS movies and some other things. And I really got to say, I actually really enjoyed Life of Belle. I was kind of on the fence at first because, oh, it's kind of a slow burn. When are we going to get to something? But, man, it really did get kind of creepy. And I have to say, the lady, I don't have her name, unfortunately, and I apologize, who played the mom was outstanding. She really did a good job of playing. And again, I'm not going to give away any of the details of what she did, but she did a great job. But I have to say, absolutely, the kids were phenomenal in this movie, because they absolutely executed what they should have done for the film, but it didn't feel like they were acting. It really felt on their parts like found footage. They were behaving like kids behave. It felt pretty natural with them. I thought they did a great job. And there was some really suspenseful moments and some really terrorizing moments. Now the movie does leaves you with more questions than it answers. I think given the format of the movie and the concept of this, the footage is released to try to help get some answers, try to help get Belle back. That's kind of the only way you could do it, really, right? Because if you're answering these questions, then it kind of blows the concept of what the movie is. It has a pretty cool ending for me. Kind of leaves you hanging. And I got to say that if done right, I would actually kind of like to see them do a sequel to this, and give a little explanation. Maybe do it as a Belle turns back up, and we're doing a kind of a documentary on what happened, and really, really dive in. I think if you've done it right creatively, I think a sequel could really work on this to really kind of answer those questions. But I enjoyed the movie. I felt like it wasn't too long. You know, so that's another issue. Some found footage films drag a little long, right? And this one didn't, right? I felt like it got in and out in the appropriate time. I thought it moved the story along at a pretty good pace. I thought they did a good job of splicing together home footage, the footage from the home cameras and Belle's cameras and everything. It felt fluid while feeling natural to me. I mean, for being a small production, a small film, I thought it was well done. It was an interesting, creepy little film that I think's a pretty good entry in the found footage genre. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, so I guess the first thing first, like you said, I obviously don't want to reveal too much, but let me first and foremost say that according to IMDb, this film had a budget of $300.
Wow, really?
And it did not feel that way. So one of the things that I think that this movie did very well is that it did not feel like a low budget horror film. The cameras were incredibly high quality. You know, like you said, they had security cameras, which was kind of part of the, you know, the found footage aspect, as well as the handheld camera from Bell. And the cameras, obviously, you would expect for a $300 budget that they're basically filming on an iPhone or some shit like that. But no, this felt like a legitimate camera setup with legitimate camera operators. It gave me Paranormal Activity vibes with how they had the camera set up in the house.
We have said in the past that we do feel certain films use the found footage format to as an excuse for the low budget. And I don't feel that was this the case. I think this was, it really felt like it was a found footage film because that's what the story called for.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, is that this film made sense as to why it was found footage. And they basically reinforced why these cameras were on many times. You know, sometimes in these horror films, there's essentially no reason for there to be cameras to the degree in which there are cameras. But this film provides a very good reason. And it also, there's not like 5 billion cameras in the house, like this is Big Brother or something.
Yeah, there's like two, I believe, right?
Yeah, there's two stationary cameras, I believe one in like the playroom area and then one in the kitchen. And then, of course, Belle's handheld camera. But I mean, these are common like areas because based on the layout of the house, the camera in the upstairs is facing the front door. The camera downstairs faces the back door.
Yep.
So it makes complete fucking sense why these cameras are there. And this is a little thing, a pet peeve I have about found footage movies, is that sometimes there are so many cameras that it is almost hard to decipher where the fuck you are in the house.
Yep.
But this film was not like that.
No, and it made perfect sense as to why Bill had this camera and was filming essentially everything, right? Because she was wanting to start like a YouTube channel or whatever you want to say. And put these, you know, this show out there. I like how almost from the get-go, they explain why the movie's called Life of Belle. And they give that. So everything as far as the cameras made sense. It was perfect sense in the format of the movie as to why it was filmed the way it was.
Well, and this is even something that even goes even deeper, which I don't know if they did this on purpose, but 2018, which is when this film supposedly takes place, right? Mm-hmm. That was the time period in which family vlogs and vlogging in general spiked to an all-time high on YouTube. So it is completely culturally relevant that their child would want to have a vlog, because if they watched YouTube, which many children do, they would have been inundated with vlog channels. So that's just another whole side segment. So I don't know if they did research about it, but it makes complete sense. So I was beyond impressed by that. I was beyond impressed by that setup. I was beyond impressed by how they put that together. Now on to the actual movie, because I've just been talking about the camera placement, but I have such a pet peeve when found footage horror movies have 5,000 cameras. And I'm just like, you're telling me that this guy who has a family of five can afford this high-tech security system and everything else, but like can't move out of the house, like because it's haunted and shit. But anyways. pet peeve, but I love how they did it in this one. But like you said, without revealing too much about the actual film, because it's not out yet, I was honestly, this movie made me skeptical as to whether or not the issues that were happening in the film were paranormal or were not paranormal.
Yep,
me because too. For a hot minute, I thought that the issues were not paranormal, which scared me even more.
Yep, me too.
And I will not confirm or deny how it ends, but how it ends does solidify which one of those routes it is.
Yeah.
But when you go into this, you don't know. And I think that was one of the best selling points to this, is that while I'm watching this, I'm like, okay, either this is going to be paranormal or some really fucked up stuff is about to happen. And some fucked up stuff did happen. I mean, there are some pretty disturbing scenes towards the end of the film. And one of the most... the craziest thing about these children is that these children are not like super well-trained actors, and you can tell because they don't act 100% natural in front of a camera, which is expected. You know what I mean? In real life, if a kid has a camera, they're going to try and play up for the camera, right?
Yep.
They're not going to act natural in front of a camera. And these kids acted like how a kid would act, not an actor would act. And so that made it even more disturbing when you heard these children cry, and the cries were so realistic. And there's a lot of crying in this, because if a child is put into this scenario, they're going to cry a lot. And that in of itself is a mindfuck. Hearing children cry, like how realistically these children were crying, and like you're just like, this sounds real. This sounds like I'm watching somebody just torture their children.
Yep.
And it's horrifying. But that just plays to like I said, these kids have never been in movies before. Neither, this is the only movie that both these children have been in. And they did such a good job, honestly. I mean, they did such a good job. And I cannot compliment them enough. Like you said, the mom and dad did good. The dad wasn't in it so much, but the mom did a really good job. It's funny because in the credits, it's just mother and father. And then it's the children are Belle and Link.
Yeah.
It's just funny that they never call them. They don't ever like use their names, which I didn't realize until just now.
Yeah.
They don't call each other anything. They're just like talking to the person. But yeah, it's so weird. It's such a weird thing too, because when I first started watching it too, I was kind of like, oh, it seems kind of cheesy. It seems kind of campy, goofy, but it slowly evolves into non-campy, non-goofy, and just kind of just straight up nightmare. And that's kind of what I want from the film. I want it to throw me off to the point where I'm not expecting what's about to happen. And that movie did this. For sure.
Yeah, and it gave, like you said, it gave very logical reasoning behind each notch up in the terror, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to give away the reasoning, but there's a point in the movie where there's no lights in the house, and it gives a very terrifying but yet logical explanation as to why that happens. There's different things that happen. That kick up the terror another notch, but there's always a reason why it did that, right? It's not just, oh, it happened.
Right.
It's just, this is what it is. There was a reasoning behind, and as it was happening, it was building. It was, like I said earlier, I felt like at the beginning it was going to be this really super slow burn. It worked, because it just, from beginning to end, it just kept building. It didn't get to a point where it built, then it came back down and built again. No, it was just like one continuous build through the whole movie until it got to the point where you're at towards the end. You're like, come on, just fucking show me what's going on. Just tell me what's happening. And then they kind of give you a little, but not enough to really even, I mean, it appeases you, but it doesn't quite quench the thirst, right? You know, it leaves you honestly wanting more.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, I want to know more about what this is. And that's why I said that if done properly, I really think a sequel could work. And again, you know, I don't know it could be done again like a straight up found footage. But if done, like I said, it may be a documentary type style, because a lot of these cases, you know, nowadays, true crime's a big thing, right? So if if Belle were to show up and they found her, you could do it as a film crew documenting this story. And that's how things are uncovered. And I don't know. But again, I'm amazed that you told me $300, because that blows my mind. I obviously knew it was a low budget, because I know it's not a big production company, but that's unbelievable, because I would have never, we've watched movies that have had much bigger budgets than that look much poorer than this. And it's pretty crazy. And for a relatively inexperienced cast, I mean, bravo, well done. I really enjoyed the movie. And I really think it's a movie that even with the rewatch and knowing what's going to happen, I'm not so sure that it would be any less terrifying, because of how they get you to the terror. I think it would be still have some of those disturbing aspects. It would still kind of make you cringe, which is in a good way, in a good filmmaking way. It's sometimes hit or miss when these movies come out that it goes straight to the streaming services. And we've watched several of them, and there have been several we've loved that have been absolute hits. And some we've watched would be like, eh, okay, I kind of see why that didn't, you know, went too straight to a streaming service. With this, yeah, I can understand why it went straight to a streaming service. I get it. It's just the nature of the beast, right? There's not enough pool wise, production wise, you know what I mean? Behind the scenes that would get this a theater release, right? It's just because there's such a new, everything's new about this. However, quality wise and filmmaking wise, it's a really good film. This has been better than some films we've watched that have got theatrical releases this year.
Yeah.
The aforementioned Night Swim. This was better than Night Swim. mean,
yeah, but, that's a pretty low bar though with Night Swim, but
well, I'm just saying since we only already brought it up.
True. Well, and one thing I was going to add to is you kind of mentioned the possibility of a sequel, and I could definitely see that. And I think that the perfect way they could do it, I'm not sure if you've watched it yet, but Horror in the High Desert is a found footage movie, but it's part mockumentary.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if they went kind of like that route, Horror in the High Desert, low budget mockumentary style, and you kind of do like, or like, there's also another movie called The Poughkeepsie Tapes, where they kind of interview the victim of the crime, and and they also obviously show some things from behind the scenes. I feel like something like that. I feel like that would be the perfect way to do this. Especially if like you said, Belle just appears one day, you get her in front of a camera, you interview her, try and get some details out of her. You know, you get like a leaked, like police, you know, interview recording, you know, stuff like that. You put it into the film and it's going to look really good. I think that that's really promising. So, I 100% agree. I think there is potential for a sequel to this if done right. Plus, excuse me, this seems like a family production. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that the director and the majority of the main actors all have the same last name. I would venture to guess that they are all related in some way, shape, or form, which to me means that that was probably part of the reason why also that this film did not get the the larger cinematic release, just because, like you said, most of the time when you have like these production companies and stuff, you get sent producers, you get sent writers, you get sent editors. They probably didn't get that because it was a family project. But I think that a sequel would do very well. I think that if done right, give it a couple years, because Belle will need to have aged a little bit for it to make sense.
Yeah.
You know, make another movie or recast her, you know, if she didn't want to do it. But I think it could work. I would watch that.
Yeah, it's very rare though that when you get that small time production that, you know, that has as you said, a kind of a family project, whatever. It's kind of rare though that when you get that, it really clicks and it seems to work, right? Because you know, sometimes when you go with convenience because you have to budget-wise, and not that there's anything wrong with that, because you know, you have to do what you have to do. Sometimes it doesn't work, right? Because you get someone who you're filling a role with because of budgetary reasons that can't really carry the part. And, I didn't feel that in this film at all. I mean, I don't know, you know, again, I don't know the complete background of the development and production of this movie, but I think, I mean, from watching it, everybody from the writing down to the acting to the whatever, everybody involved did their part well. Everything worked for me. I don't have a lot of flaws. I think it, definitely for three, if it was a $300 budget, I think it definitely overachieved. I really do. I truly do. I'd be fascinated. I don't know. I'd be fascinated no more if that's truly the budget was that low. I mean, just literally like, hey, was this one of their homes that they used and things like, I mean, it's like, I'm fascinated to know more about that. Pretty wild. So, bravo. This comes out on Screambox May 17th. I cannot stress enough for people to give this a watch. It was absolutely a fun movie. One of my most entertaining things to watch so far this year. It was really enjoyable. And, it was well done, and again, yet another installment that has kind of helped turn my opinion on found footage. This was, I really enjoyed it.
So I was going to say one thing is that it seems to me that as long as the found footage film comes from like Screambox or Shudder, must be good.
if you watch my track record, that's true. Yeah, I mean, all I need is a little bit of originality with it, right? Not doesn't have to break the mold, but just give me logical reasoning behind what, you know, not just because I can't afford an expensive camera, so I'm going to make it work as a film. I need to know that the reason behind why the story is told that way makes sense. Exactly. And this film, it made sense. It was absolutely the way to tell the story. And, it absolutely worked. And, so therefore I enjoyed it. So well done. Well done. So Ike, let's rate this thing. So, why don't you go first out of 5 screams? Ike, what are you giving Life of Belle?
All right. So, the camera work alone, 5 stars. I kid. I'm not kidding. If I was grading this solely on the camera work in the logic that was put into just the 5 seconds it took for them to actually make this logical, 10 stars. But as a whole, this movie had a lot of positives. It did have a couple of the drawbacks that you get sometimes with, you know, low budget films. There wasn't any, you know, crazy, you know, effects or anything like that. There wasn't anything that, you know, anything of that nature that really wowed me, but everything else was really great. So I think, I'm going to have to give it a 3.5 out of 5. I think that I was almost going to give it a 4, but I just thought to myself, is this movie as good as Terrifier 2? And I cannot say that it is. So
I agree with that. I don't think it's quite the 4 movie, right? It's not that, you know, and again, that is not a slight on them. I would give it a 3.5 as well. That's what I'm giving it. But to give a movie that in our rating systems, our opinions is better than your average film, which is a 3 screams for us, on that kind of budget and everything else. That's high praise, right? You did a 3.5, which beats out a lot of huge production movies in entertainment for us. So, I highly recommend it. I really hope people really give this a watch when it comes out on Screambox. And, once again, thank you to Screambox and Shudder, for giving movies like this a platform. Because without them, we wouldn't have got to see this film. And, so that's why they're there. That's why I love them and why I think they're such a great service, to us as horror fans. So, yeah, all absolutely. Right. Next week, like we said, The Strangers Chapter 1, which hits theaters Friday, May 17th. So go check it out so that when we talk about it, you have seen it and can follow along. So, Ike, before we get out of here, anything you want to add?
Well, I guess the only thing I can say is, looking forward to next week. If somebody approaches your door and asks if Tamara's home, get the gun. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I'm the guy that if somebody approaches the door, I'm flipping off the lights and peeking out the blinds and be like, do I know them? No, I'm just going to pretend I'm not home then.
Right.
I would never open the door for anybody I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm not a trustworthy person like that. And, you can blame it on the horror movies if you want, but, so be it.
Valid.
So, I'm very much looking for this. The Strangers Chapter 1 was one of the movies that we were super looking forward to coming in the year. I'm not 100% don't recall, but I'm pretty sure it was in our top 5 most anticipated movies of 2024. I would think so. So I'm very excited to see this, and I can't wait. And we will talk all about that next episode. But before we get there, again, make sure you go and watch Life of Belle on Screambox. Highly recommended. And until next episode, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and have many pleasant nightmares.